Welcome one, welcome all. Step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 175, coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, on Twitter, at PortalGaming60, and on YouTube. You can watch playthroughs and unboxings on our YouTube channel, Step Into The Portal. And that is most often where you will find me. I am your host for this episode, The Brant. Howdy, everybody. This is episode 175. It is simply entitled BGGCon with BJ, because I am here not by myself, but with my good friend BJ from Board Game Gunga. Ooh, we're going to try that again. BJ from Board Game Gumbo. BJ, how are you?
Hey, it's the Brant. Oh, my God. Is this Connecticut's second most favorite citizen, most famous citizen behind John Mayer? It's like John Mayer, the Brant, and then Eric Sommer somewhere
there. Some order like that is what it is.
Well, thank you for inviting me to the attic. I'm a little surprised how roomy it is up here. I mean, we both have lots of room to talk and chat, and this is great, man. I'm finally getting to see the famous attic.
Yeah, this is the attic where I record and do everything. And I actually really like it. I don't know what it's like down in Louisiana, but I have a space heater on behind me. Like, it's hit or miss. I know everybody says their weather is up and down, but like, we have years where it's 60, 70 degrees between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And not this year. It is 25, 30, 35 degrees. And it snowed all morning. It didn't collect because our ground is still too warm. But I mean, if it snows again, we're getting serious snow. I can tell you that, because it's been plenty cold.
And to let the listeners know, I'm not actually in your attic. I'm actually in Louisiana, you know.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I gave that away. Sorry.
But you said so much snow. Is that scary white stuff that comes down out of the sky? I've heard about it.
It's not scary. It's delightful. I mean, honestly, so I was at church this morning and it was snowing and I'm playing bass and we're singing Christmas songs and it's amazing. Like, that's just super fun. That's very thematic. You talk about a thematic experience.
Does it burn whenever it touches your skin, or is it safe?
No, it's nice and safe. It's gentle. We came home from church and the kids were so excited because it didn't collect on the ground, but it collected on our trampoline that we have. And no lie, there was probably a half inch to three quarters of an inch of light, fluffy snow on the trampoline. For whatever reason, that surface collects a lot better. So they went and jumped on the trampoline.
So it's funny you say that. Back in 2006, I was in outside of Denver in Breckenridge, Colorado. Took my family skiing for the very first time. On Sunday, we went to church. And as we were walking out of church and heading back to our car, it started snowing. And I've got pictures of us right outside the church with snow coming down. And you got to understand, my kids have never seen snow in their life. This is just one of those magical moments that I will never forget. Snow is actually fantastic when you can visit it in Colorado, leave it behind, and then come back to here. We're down to 60 degrees right now. I am freezing. Ooh, but the good news, it's gumbo weather.
Why is that?
Anytime it's 60 or below, it's gumbo season, man. Gumbo season. My mom made a gumbo today. And actual gumbo. I had actual gumbo today. My first gumbo of the season. So I'm super excited with that. A little sausage, a little chicken. It was fantastic.
That is good stuff.
Expecting a check. Is that right? $175, $1.75.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, you listen. That's right. Yes, it's $1.75.
I mean, I got the spot. I mean, I got as Paula said, I've got the $175, one of those magical numbers. Man, thank you, the Brant. This is very special. I appreciate this honor.
Yeah, if you don't know, BJ is referencing the previous episode where I had Paula Deming on, and I told her the check was in the mail for $1.74. So, if you want to be on, you know, people are going to be like waiting up for episode 10,000. They want their $100 check, you know?
I'm assuming that's the residuals, right? $1.75 every time the episode broadcasts as it goes
into
syndication.
Oh, right, there you go. Yeah, I got to send you.
I mean, thousands of dollars. So how have you been, though?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I think teaching punched me in the gut in September. I know I was slow on getting episodes out, even streaming. I was a little bit slow. And I think every year I never expect teaching to be too bad. And it gets you a little bit in the beginning. But this year, because we had students home like entirely last year, never in the building. And now with everyone back, I think it finally like kind of caught up with me and caught up with them. And I feel like some days I teach and come home and I'm like, I am exhausted. You know, there was a lot of teachers. It was something like 25,000 school employees quit in the month of September.
Ooh.
Yeah, across the country. So, you know,
Wow.
we're kind of going through that. And when it was like late September, early October, we were all saying, boy, it feels like December. It feels like January. Like it feels like the middle of the year. But I have to say, since then, I've kind of gotten back into the swing of things, and the students have gotten back into things. And now I feel like, okay, I'm ready to do the stretch run, the Thanksgiving to Christmas stretch run. Let's do it. You know, let's do the 3.5 weeks. And I've got a little project going with my students I'm excited about. So that stuff feels neat.
My oldest son is actually teaching in Madrid. He graduated from our local university. He's teaching
Oh, there you go.
English in Madrid. He got homesick, so he's going to finish up his contract early and come home. He's thinking about law school. He's thinking about teaching. And my wife said, if you've ever thought about teaching, there's like a thousand teacher shortage right now in
Yeah,
Louisiana. I
yeah.
mean, it's you could literally throw a stick and hit a school that needs a teacher right now. So
For sure.
for those of you out there who have graduated and are looking for a job, you know, there's a teacher shortage, and you can really do a good service by giving it back to these kids. You know, the same, my public school teachers were fantastic. I'll be honest, some of my high school teachers that I had there, I enjoyed more than even in college. I learned more with some of them in college. I was blessed to go to school with some fantastic teachers that really put me on the path. I know you're in theater. I did theater all 4 years, and I never would have done that except I had these drama teachers that really encouraged everybody to join in. We had all these extracurricular activities to get involved in, and my high school years were fun. I really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah, my parents pushed me into theater. My sister wanted to do it. She's a couple years older than me. And my parents pushed me into theater at 5 years old, 6 years old, something like that. And I started doing theater. And so I've never thought otherwise. I've just always done theater because when I was a little kid, they just sent me to go do it. But it's just so good for talking in front of people, for being up there, for building confidence. There's nothing like standing in front of a bunch of people and having to know what you're supposed to do.
Theater and band, right? I mean,
Yeah,
being in a
exactly.
band for so many years, I got used to being in front of a crowd and just, you know, you just some nights the set list is not working or a particular piece of equipment is not working, and you just have to roll with it. And sometimes the crowd is giving you feedback and sometimes they're not. And it's your job to entertain them. So being in theater and being in the band, it's one of the things that I think helps with content creation in the board game industry, of course, you
Yeah.
know. So
Yeah.
I know I like that. And you're a bassist, right?
I'm a bass player. That's my
Oh,
thing.
bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super
The
fun.
rhythm section.
I love playing bass. Now it's my longest running instrument. I play a bunch of other instruments, but bass is just the one that I really hone in on
Oh,
and
what
play
was your
all the
first
time.
instrument? Was it piano?
Trombone.
Trombone. Oh, you were a band guy.
Oh
Okay,
yeah.
yeah. I was
Yeah.
piano, so.
Trombone in third grade. Somewhere along the way, playing piano. I probably played some piano prior. Both my older siblings played piano and both quit. So then we had all the books, and I'm the youngest.
David
So I
Glover,
took the
baby.
books and went through the books. And I probably did that when I was in first and second grade. But I specifically remember learning trombone. And then when I was in like third and fourth grade, my sister taught me through the books, like, okay, this is how you play piano. And I kind of learned everything and then went from there. But I never end up really having a teacher. It was just always this secondary thing I did, you know.
Same thing with me. I started in piano with a teacher, but then I picked up the other instruments. I literally taught myself the drums, putting Bryan Adams in my headphones,
There you go.
listening to Foreigner and Loverboy, and just playing as loud as I could on my brother's drum set, just because I always wanted to be a drummer. I never did pick up the bass. I play the guitar. You know, I can play the bass from the standpoint. I know how to play the
Sure, here
bass.
are
I'm just
notes,
not,
yeah.
yeah, I know the notes. I'm just not a bassist, you know, from that standpoint. I can never be a bassist, but just picking up the guitar and the drums, just literally just listening to music and picking up. I think I had a couple of lessons in guitar just to get started, learning the basic chords. But after that, it's all self-taught, which you could actually tell if you ever watched me play the guitar. You go, yeah, that guy's never gotten lessons. He's really bad.
Well,
He's
there's nothing
really
like listening to an electric guitar player be like, I can play bass, and they pick it up,
bad.
and then you just start laughing, and they're like, what? And you're like, you're playing electric guitar.
Right.
You're just playing thicker strings. That's not how a bass plays. You're
I
trying to
wish I
play it
learned to
like an
pick.
electric guitar because bass, you know, wants to play on certain notes and be present at certain times that electric guitar doesn't.
Yep. I did like playing the piano in the band that I was in. You know, if you're doing country music, bass, drummer, piano, we have to be what we call the pocket. You got to be in the pocket, you got to be in sync. You're the rhythm section for every single song. And so I had never done that. I played rock and roll music when I was younger, and it was a different vibe, but playing country music with this band, I wasn't that exposed to country music, but learning with these guys and just developing that camaraderie where I knew what the bassist and the drummer were going to do on a night to night bass. And sometimes we would just throw in these little licks or throw in something different, because after a while, when you're playing a 3-chord song and you're playing it 120 times a year, you got to do something a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. You toss it here, you toss it there, you toss it here. Yeah. The people I've been playing with, it's 20 years. So it's like, we don't even think. We barely even look at each other. You know what I mean? We've just been playing together for 20 years. So
our band broke up about 25-ish years, a long time ago. But I was just texting the guys the other day and I said, hey, in 2 weeks, let's get in the backyard. Let's put a fire on. We'll do what we call a guitar round, where each person just throws out a song and we all play it. And I think we're gonna do that. That'll be the first time we play together since 1997.
Woo!
That'll be a fun time.
Were you in 98 degrees?
It might be.
I don't know. I know that was like a singing. I thought it was like a boy band.
I think that's what that was. No,
that was the first band that I thought of that must have ended in about 1997.
Yeah, I haven't heard.
Maybe they were a little later than that. I don't know.
And you're a bassist, and you live right down the road from me. If you're available in 2 Saturdays,
there you go.
Bring a little acoustic bass.
There you go.
That'd be fun.
Nice. All right. Well, if you can't tell, BJ and I are old friends. We have met at many cons, chatted, quasi worked together at things, and we are reminiscing here because we don't get to see each other at conventions now.
Is this a music podcast or a board game podcast?
It's great. But people are here to listen to games. So I'm going to review a game, and then I basically called in BJ because he went to BGG Con, and there's not a lot of people going to a lot of, well, so I don't want to down cons, but we're all kind of going to our individual cons that we can make it to. So I want to hear about BGG Con because I know there were a lot of the Essen games there. So that's going to be kind of our order of events here, if you will.
What'd you play recently? I want to hear about it.
Yeah, so I played Imperial Steam from Capstone Games.
Ooh.
So this is a new game from, I hope I pronounce it right, Alexander Humer. And he is the designer of Lignum, which was another title that Capstone brought
over. That's where I know the name.
And so this is a train game. But if you hear train game and you want to run the other way, think train game in the Euro sense. Think Railways of the World. People always call Brass a rail game. I just intend, in terms of being a Euro game, think Ticket to Ride, obviously, is like a light family, but it's that style more than economy, manipulation, stocks. It has those things, but they're secondary, tertiary to the rest of the game. So really, it's a action selection worker placement game, depending on your cup of tea, because you can take spaces that other people take. You just can't take the spaces that you already took. You have to pay a penalty. So some people call that action selection. Rotto would swear that's still worker placement because you're placing a worker.
Yeah.
So
eternal debate.
Yeah, you are building across the Austria region. I believe it's southern Austria, if I am correct. So not the Sound of Music area, but the other part.
Okay.
I believe they're in North Austria in Sound of Music. So you're building.
Yeah, that's Salzburg and Vienna in northern.
Yeah,
Austria,
exactly. Right? Yeah, this is the southern part.
Okay.
My European geography isn't quite as good as it used to be, but we're getting there. So everybody starts in one corner of the map, and you're essentially trying to build rails to the, like, you're in the northeast corner and you want to build to the southwest corner. Once somebody does that, that will end the game. That will trigger the end of the game. Otherwise, it's 3 rounds. So that's how long the game is going to last. So I'm sorry, it's not 3 rounds. It's 8 rounds.
Okay.
I was thinking of a different game all of a sudden. No, so it's 8 rounds. I don't have the game in front of me, so that's where I'm lapsing a little bit. So essentially, you have these workers, which are hands. They're wooden meeple hands. And so they're technically actions because you have workers that you can also use to either factories that you're going to build build the railroads. So what's different in this game is we can all build track on any connection. So on your turn, you pick one of 11 actions. I am not going to go through all of those actions, but there's 11 tiles laid out. The board is really nice. The components are really nice for sure. There's a lot of setup. So there's a lot to get through. That's important to know. And it's definitely not a short game. We did pretty well. I've got a group that I play with, Larry, who you see on the stream sometimes, Brian, my wife, all tend to be pretty fast players. I wouldn't put us into like high speed players, but we're far from AP players.
Okay.
We're all there to try the game out, to get through it. You win, I lose. Let's move on. Let's get most of the rules right. That's kind of our style. So I believe we got through it in about 2.5 hours with kind of a slow teach on my end.
Okay.
That was three players. So it's definitely pretty long. I think it says 60 to 120 on the box.
And
I could definitely see a two. I could definitely see a two-player game getting closer to 60.
Okay.
And a three-player game getting down to 120. I don't think a four-player game would hit 2 hours. I think it would be over. But essentially, you're going to pick one of those actions, and there's so many different things. And you are trying to accomplish a lot of different things. Essentially, you want to build that track, but you could totally go a route where you don't connect that track. At the end of the game, the person with the most money will win, as is many of these games. And so you're going to kind of get all your stock payouts at the end of the game, but it isn't really stock. Basically, you have influence, and your influence is moving up, and the four major hubs. So each space is a city, but four of the tiles on the board are the hubs.
Okay.
And those hubs are going to be increasing in influence. And the more of those you pass and have your influence higher than, you get more money at the end of the game.
Okay.
So that's
you're not actually buying stock and then trading it or selling it or closing out a company.
Okay. So there's none of that, which I think is why it works as a two-player game.
Okay.
Because there's not stock manipulation. There's not this, that, the other thing. The only bidding in the game is to go first, and it's not really bidding. It's almost like your initial investment into your influence.
Oh, okay.
So the more you spend in the beginning, the less cash you'll have on hand, but the higher you'll move up that influence track, which is who's going first and who can purchase workers at the different cities. So your influence has to be as high as a city in order to hire workers there.
Okay.
So if you keep your influence low at the start, you won't be able to hire a lot of workers, but you'll have a lot of cash on hand. So that's really the only like bid that you're doing. Other than that, it's pretty euro. But anyway, you can build tracks where other people build tracks. You just have to pay them. And then there are state-owned tracks that you can just buy out from the state. So you could just buy those to keep moving. Because the interesting part is if you take the build a track action, you can build one or two tracks. The cost is always the same. It's just a matter of the amount of workers. Because let's say I want to build into a city. It might have a value of three. I have to have three value of workers. So my workers start at level one. If I don't use them, any that I don't use upgrade to level two, and any that I don't use upgrade to level three. And I just need some combination. So on the first turn, you can hire a bunch of workers and then you've got a whole bunch of level one workers, or you could not hire workers and just let your workers increase in experience and then use them to be able to, build your tracks and whatnot. So you kind of have this option of, I could build up a worker pool and then be able to build two tracks at a time. And we felt like that was going to be kind of the best thing to do. Like just sit back, let your workers build up, and then as often as you can, be efficient and build two tracks. Because the hardest thing in the game to get is the materials, the coal, the iron, the wood, and stone? I think it's... Iron?
That's more Euro-y the way you're describing
it's
where you're
very
having
Euro-y. It's very Euro-y. Definitely. Again, it says two players on the box, and I see a lot of people asking. Everything at list, BGG and everything says, it's best with three and four, because I think it's just kind of one of those interactive games.
It sounds
like
I don't see
a problem
better.
At two.
Okay. But you haven't tried it yet.
I haven't tried it at two, so I can't say no. And I don't often review games after one play, but this is just such a longer game. I wasn't sure. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of little other pieces. One of the big ones is that you increase the value of your company, and that attracts shareholders. So now what you can go and do, this is the last part I really need to explain, is you can build factories throughout, and those factories can help you supply to cities. It's like a one-time thing. So you might build a factory and you get rid of one of your workers and you put two, three, or four cubes there. And that's the number of cubes. You can never refill your factories. They're just going to produce that much. Okay. And then you can either send those cubes, you can deliver them to cities that are looking for them one time per game, or you can take like a production action where you get all those resources to be able to build more trains. That's the most interesting part of the game for sure, in my mind.
Yeah.
These limited resources, tight resources, how do I figure out? And that's very Lignum. If you ever play that game, that game is extremely tight. Too much for me, but some people love that. So eventually you can go and get contracts that say, if you have these factories, you'll get this much money from your shareholders at the end. But that those will only pay out if somebody connected to that final city. If nobody did, they won't pay out. And in addition, if you don't connect, you have to pay the person who did to use their tracks to complete your contracts. Also, you have to have the factories that are on there by the end of the game. So you can take contracts early and then you're trying to fulfill them. So you run yourself into a little bit of that risk. But they also give you shareholders. And as your value increases, you can sell your stock to your shareholders, but there's no getting it back. So if you sell 10% of your stock, you might get $120 or $90 or whatever. But at the end of the game, 10% of your final points, your income, goes to that person. So if you sell 10 shares, your score is zero at the end of the game.
Oh, is there any penalty for not fulfilling those contracts?
Yes. So if nobody connects, nobody has to pay the penalty, which is interesting.
Okay.
But if somebody connects and you haven't completed them, you have to pay the contract instead, which means you're sunk. You can't win. Although the contracts range from like $50 to like $350.
This is a game that almost sounds like you're trying to stay out of trouble.
It is. It's definitely a stay out of trouble Euro. I enjoyed the game. I definitely liked it. And reviewing it after one play isn't fair solely because I think where the game is that all that stuff can be randomly set up at the start of the game. And when I say random, there's a system for doing it. They tell you where to put the state-owned tracks. So it's like you have like one of 22 setups and you shuffle a set of cards and it says, this is how you're going to set it up. And the four hubs move around and the state-owned tracks move around and the different contracts come out. But they tell you how to start the game and they tell you where each of those cities are going to go. But there is a whole setup, like four-page setup of randomizing all that stuff. And I think this is a game like games that have maps, right? Like Concordia, like Age of Steam. I don't know if you could help me out with any those games. Ticket to Ride, right? Where you get different maps and it changes it up. And that's what brings more of that like kind of joy to the game. So I haven't done that, so I feel like it's a little bit of a disservice. But that base level play that I had, we all felt like it was interesting, but we weren't sure what we would do different each time. Like it did feel a little bit scripted, even though you have 11 actions. Now, the really interesting part is I believe you start with two actions, but then every round for the next three or four rounds, you get an additional action. So once you get to five or six actions, you really have some choices to make. But when you have two actions at the start of the game, it's pretty clear what you should do with those two actions. And we found that, like, I definitely went the suboptimal route only because I was the third player. And when I saw two people do something else, I did something different from the start, and it didn't work.
Okay.
What they did worked so much better than what I did, and it was clear by round three. It wasn't so bad that I was like, I'm done with this game. I was still having fun. I like tinkering. Oh, I'm going to lose, but let me see what I can do. Let me push my limits. Let me see, you know, buy from the market, all that kind of stuff. Pick up too many contracts. So I have fun with that stuff, even if I know I'm kind of going to lose that early in the game. But it did feel a little bit more like a splatter where you get behind. And when you get behind,
it's hard to catch up.
Might be how it is. But again, with that random setup, I can see that because the idea is, right, you're those deep thinkers, right? Deep thinking Euro people, which I can be one of those people. I can also not be one of those people. But typically I am. Here's the board setup. We're all going to take 10 minutes to look at the board before we even consider doing our opening bid. And that can be really enjoyable for everybody at the table all in. But for a first play or a second play, it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. Yeah, so I do have a question about it. Capstone Games, I've been collecting and playing their Cube Rail system, their Cube Rail games. They're porting them over from, you know, these other companies. And that doesn't sound like the Cube Rail, but does it have that Ian O'Toole touch with the artwork and everything? Or is it just something that they've straight imported from whoever they got?
Yeah, no, it's not Ian O'Toole. Okay. Oh boy, I'll feel bad if it is. I don't have the box in front of me, but I know what Ian O'Toole looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. And it doesn't look like it. So if it is Ian O'Toole, I thoroughly apologize to him.
So it's not part of that. It's not part of that cube rail.
It's not cube rails. It's not box. A Winsome. It's yeah, not. Yeah. It's not a 1 hour wonder, 90 minute wonder where it's high interaction. That's how those games are.
Man, I am.
I would say this
games.
Is medium interaction.
I am digging these games. These little capstone. It's my introduction to it. Although I did back and play Union Station from Travis Hill, the cube rail system, that 1 hour ish. Where you have a little bit of stock manipulation, a lot of player interactivity, and you're still doing a train game. Man, sign me up. I'm not hearing that from Imperial Rails. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Imperial Steam.
Imperial Steam. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't find it, but I would 100% sit down and play this game again.
Okay.
Good. And probably the thing that I say often to people would be, I wouldn't be the person to put it on the table, but I could be the person to put this game on the table again. I just wouldn't play with that starting setup again. And I'm not telling people that they should play a random setup the first time, because they're going to find the same thing we found from that setup. Like, it seemed like there were some ideas and ways to go. My favorite thing in a Euro is where it tells you you're all going to go in different directions.
Right.
And when you sit down next time, you may assess and go a different way, right?
That's the beauty of Concordia, right?
And absolutely. Right. There's a great example that you just gave. And I didn't feel that from this one, but maybe those random setups. But I feel like the random setup would be, oh, now we're all going to go in this direction, right? And then we'd add another setup, oh, we're all going to go in this direction. So that's okay, right? We're all kind of told where to go from the start, and then we're fighting over it, which leads to more interaction, right? Because if nobody wants to take this action or nobody wants to do this thing, you go left, I'll go right, you go straight, who cares? We never run into each other. There's no competition. So by making a path that's more clear, then it breeds that competition.
But you got me excited about it. You've got the word steam, and as long as it's about trains and it doesn't have an 18 in front of it, I'm going to try it. I mean, I'm all about the trains. So I'd like to try it. If we're at a convention together and you teach it to me, I'm in. I may have to take a look at that. I'm all in on the cube rails, slowly but surely. I'm trying to pick up as many as I can and play them. And I'm just having a blast. It's just thinking enough from the stock simulation, you know, standpoint, and still training where you're building out the routes. So it tickles both sides of my brain. Yeah. Imperial sounds good. I really like what's on. Well, time is a little bit long for playing a train game, but
yeah, you know, that's a tough time at a convention. Ironically, sometimes you want convention games to not necessarily run you all day, because you're thinking, oh, I'll get to this and then I'll get to that. Whereas this was basically what we knew we were playing and then we were done. So the time didn't matter. Okay. For us, we're playing at the store, and we're like, well, we'll either be done at 8 or we'll be done at 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Like, it didn't matter.
This was part of your Extra Life thing?
Nope. This was just us playing on a day. And I didn't feel like a long 2.5 hours, so that was good. It was kind of like, oh, whoa, that took us 2.5 hours. Oh, yeah. It was a 30, but that was my fault. I just didn't have the game down as well, so I'm thumbing the rule book. But honestly, after I taught it once, I'm like, wow, I could have done this in 10, 12 minutes.
Were the scores relatively close? Were you guys all kind of at least
two people were close and I was far back? I think Larry won and had $900. No, Larry won and had like $750, and Brian was like $675, and I was $350. I was way behind.
And the brand also played.
And I also played, yes. Yes.
As Matt Riddle and Vin Fintrack say.
Yeah, but this would also be like, I'm just trying to make sure I get the teach down and everything and all the little questions as we go. And that's always more important to me than winning. So, but I'm happy to sit at the table. Like,
well, your description was clear. So you got me excited. It's something I'm going to look for.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not one that I would want people to listen to my review and say like, oh, I don't want to play that. I'm just not saying, I don't think it's a top 10 game from the year for me. Personally.
You have an idea for your top game this year? Usually you're pumping a game.
I am doing a top 10 with Eric Sommer for the Winter Spectacular. So we're filming that this week.
I'll wait to hear.
So I've put my top 10 together, basically.
Connecticut's third most famous celebrity, Eric Sommer.
That's right.
I'm ready to hear your top 10. That's going to be fun.
So you've got a whole recap for us from BGGCon, some games you want to talk about and things you want to say. So I'm just going to pass it over to you.
Yeah, so BGGCon, if for people who haven't been, BGGCon is the Board Game Geek actual convention. It happens once in the spring, which I've never been to, what they used to call family. And then once in the fall, that's the traditional one. It was on its way to about 5,000 people at the big Dallas Convention Hotel, right smack dab in the downtown, right next to where JFK where the JFK Memorial is and all that. Yep, so if you're familiar with that part of Dallas, that's what we're talking about. We're right there by the station. It's very convenient to everything. Lots of restaurants, big, beautiful hotel. And then, of course, I don't know if you know, but about 18 months ago, an event happened and it slowed the world down. So the convention had to get canceled last year. So this is my first time since 2019. It's probably my third or fourth year going to BGGCon. I have absolutely loved it. I still like Dice Tower Con better because I love that hotel and I love all the people involved. Yeah, I could see everybody like you visible. But BGGCon is probably right there, and a library pretty close to Tom's library. I'm telling you, I even heard Tom Vassell jealous at one point because there was a couple of games that they had that he didn't have yet. So,
quick question: do you drive to BGGCon, or is it far enough to fly?
Yeah, it's a 6-hour drive, so super easy. One of the guys that plays with us in the gumbo does fly. Because if you pay attention to the sales, you can get a $150 ticket. But we drive every year with a couple of other friends. We have this thing where we
thinking that's an interesting plan. If I fly to you and then we drive over together,
Buc-ee's. You've probably never been to a Buc-ee's yet, right?
Never been. I don't even know what a Buc-ee's is.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, great. We'll get I know Buc-ee Dent. No. That's a different Buc-ee. But Buc-ee's is a famous truck stop here here on I-10 and I-20. And it's the world's biggest truck stop. So you got to, I don't want to spoil it. You got to see it to believe it. So we'll stop at Buc-ee's. We'll get a brisket sandwich and we'll get some of the, I hung out the entire time this year with, of course, a couple of the guys from the gumbo, Jay Bell. I saw Jay Bell a couple of times. I don't know if you know Jay in the first couple of days, but most of the time I was with these guys from Iowa, the Board Boys podcast. And if you haven't heard the Board Boys podcast, there's, four friends that are just hilariously funny from Iowa. They got the Midwestern accent. They talk about basements and snow and all these strange things to a Southern boy. I don't know all the lingo, but I'm slowly picking it up. Yeah. And they love Euros as much as I do. So it was 4 days of just about as much Euros from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. We played Euros almost all day, mixing it in with other ones. And I'm going to talk about some of those, but just a fantastic time. And what was so cool, Brent, is for 2 years, I did online gaming at first, and then slowly we've done what we call pod gaming, where it's just 3 or 4 people. You kind of know everybody. You see them if you watch the Twitch stream. You see Jay or Dave or Bradley or my nephew or my sons. You'll see us playing. But that's a very small group of players that are playing. Sure. It was so nice to go and give Stephen Bonacore a fist bump.
Right.
The Board Boys guys that I haven't seen in 2 years are to hang out with Carla Kopp from Weird Draft Games. I adore playing games with her. She's always got some interesting prototype. Just to see these people. I don't know if you ever played After the Empire from Grey Fox Games.
Oh, yeah. I love After the Empire.
Okay. Well, the designers, Evan and Ryan, I've been on this online message group. I've been playing with them on Discord. We've been playing on TTS on Tabletop.
Oh, nice.
But never actually met them. So I got to fist bump with these guys.
I've never met them either. They sent me over. We did a live play of After the Empire.
Really?
So we did a live play where we actually did a live unbox, teach, and play. So, of course, here I am reading the rule book on stream.
Were they involved in the stream?
We didn't know. So I think Ryan, I can't remember. I apologize to Ryan and Evan because it was in the spring. I think it was Ryan. He jumped on and he starts he's on the stream. He's like, "Oh no, that goes here." And I'm like, "Boy, Ryan, you really know the game." He's like, "Well, I am one of the designers."
I'm the designer.
I had no idea.
That's fun.
So then I got to communicate with them and they actually sent me the solo mode. So a little bit later, a month later, so I did their solo mode that was in the Kickstarter.
I'm going to go back and check that out.
Solo mode. It was when I was on the table and it was a little bit low lighting. It was at night. So it's a little tough for people to see, but it gives you the idea of the solo mode. You know what I mean? I think that's what people are looking for. Not an amazing.
These guys are awesome. They will go online and just walk you through the game or just chat. You got to meet these guys. They are so excited about being board game designers, being published, and just about games in general.
Oh, I should have them on the show.
You should. How do you say In fact, I'll text Evan after this and get him on there. I drove to Baton Rouge with my Kickstarter copy, the preview copy, like what you had. Drove to Baton Rouge, got the iHeart Board Games guys to do it online with Sagan from Southern Board Game Fest. And of course, Evan and Ryan were in the chat. And I was getting the chat from iHeart Board Games to help me with strategy. And of course, you know, it was things like, you should leave the north wall completely exposed. What are the odds that something's going to happen? Of course, you know, bad things happen. But it was fun. I got blown out. But it was one of those things where we're just trying all kind of crazy strategies. So at meeting those guys in person after playing online gaming, I'm going to tell you, man, I still do my turn-based games. I got, you know, friends from all over the world that we play turn-based games. But as for online gaming, it was so nice to be in person and playing gaming again. We haven't done our game nights at the game store in, other than a couple of times here and there, in 18 months. It was just nice to get back to the convention. So that was fun. The crowd was very small by BGG standards.
Sure.
They sold about 2,200 tickets. They didn't even have 2,200 people show up.
Right.
They were giving away free games every single day because they gave out so many few games. They were giving out pint glasses from the year before because people hadn't picked all this stuff up. I've got a shot from Saturday night right outside the main gaming hall in the hallway. I came out of the bathroom and I looked at it. I said, oh my God, I gotta take a picture of this. So I took my mask off. I did a selfie with me in the main hallway leading to the two main gaming halls. And there's one person about 150 feet down the hallway.
Wow.
You can't even make out who it is. Just a person. I was like, this will never happen again because you've been to Gen Con, you've been to Dice Archon. The halls are just full of people all the time.
Right.
It was really nice having, it was like having a small con, yet you had a 7,000 game library, restaurants and any person you wanted to game with. So BGG Con, I enjoyed it as that first con that to get back together. Hopefully in March, we can do Southern Board Game Fest. We're planning on it right here at the University of Louisiana. We'll see if that happens. It just depends on what's going on with this Omicron thing that I'm hearing about. So hopefully that's not going to be too bad. But we did, we had a great time. We played a lot of cool games. Some of these games I think you're going to mention. I want to kind of highlight three games, if you don't mind.
Let's do it. I'm so excited.
The first game.
As soon as I saw you post that you were there and you were excited about all these games, I was like, I wanted to like type to you and I was, forget it. Let's just be on an episode. Just come on an episode.
So the first one is strictly for you. And that's all why the viewers can't see this, but I'm wearing a BB-8 t-shirt.
Oh, there you go.
For the brand. I mean, if you're going to come on the brand's podcast, you got to.
I get it now because I did not name this after a Star Wars episode. I had too much Thanksgiving and Christmas going on this weekend to get to an episode name.
We got BB-8 right here. So the first game I want to talk about, I'm going to do an old game.
All right.
And then I'll do kind of a medium game and then one of the newer games, you know, that's sort of out of the con. And the first one is, and you've probably played it, Star Wars Carcassonne or Carcassonne Star Wars.
Oh, I haven't because it's not published in North America, correct?
You can only get it in Europe.
Oh, I've never played it like at a con or something.
I'm just walking by the library. Dave from the Gumbo was trying to buy a copy. It was for sale in one of the little BGG, you know, auctions.
Yeah.
But he got outbid or he didn't bid enough or something. The guy turned it down. So I'm walking through the library, passed up the hot games, and I'm looking at the Carcassonne. I always check out the Carcassonne to see if there's something I haven't played because I love Carcassonne. And there it is. Star Wars Carcassonne. Or maybe make the lightsaber sound. Exactly. So I said, oh, we got to check it out. So I checked it out right away, took it to the gaming hall. Me, Jay Bell, we call him the Carc Shark. He's so good at our Carcassonne. Me, Jay Bell, and somebody else played. No, actually, I think Jay missed it. I played with the Board Boys guys and with Dave, and it's Carcassonne without the farmers.
Okay, which farmers is the hardest part to explain.
Farmers are my least favorite part of Carcassonne.
100%.
Yeah, okay. So imagine without the farmers, and each one of the factions, each one of the meeples has some kind of faction. So I was Yoda in green, and my meeple actually had a Yoda on it. You know, like the big meeple you have in all Carcassonnes? That was kind of like the Yoda. Everybody else was just regular meeples. And somebody else was maybe Boba Fett. I don't remember.
You got to have a Darth Vader and a Luke, I assume.
Yeah, I just don't remember who all the factions were. But there was five factions in there, and each one of them were famous Star Wars characters. And they had all the different symbols. So you had the Rebel symbol, the Imperial symbol, and what do they call the third one? The Scoundrels or whatever they call it?
The
Bounty Hunters. They have the little...
Smugglers and Scoundrels?
Yeah, you can get the X-Wing figures and they have that little symbol on it showing that they're not part of each faction. So you had those symbols. Those symbols, when enclosing an area, like a city, of course, it's asteroid fields there, you know, or a planet, which substitutes for the monasteries. When you close those things in, you get bonus points for getting those symbols in there. Then the really cool thing about it is if you are both on a, instead of a road, it's like, a hyperspace loop or something
sure,
like that.
Sure, sure.
You know, we kind of ignored all the terminology. Anytime your area finally meets up in normal Carcassonne, that, you know, it that's okay. You're just constantly trying to latch on to other people's areas. And then once it closes, then we figure out who's got the most and that person scores, right? Not in Star Wars Carcassonne. Anytime two meet, there's a duel. It is a stupid, dumb duel. It's just rolling dice depending on the amount of meeples and
gotcha.
And, maybe, and I think also the symbols. So obviously, if Yoda is trying to attack an Imperial planet, the Imperial player is going to get an extra bonus in the rolls. So it's kind of a dumb combat, but we made it fun because we're doing it thematic and we're Yoda. They trapped Yoda in the middle. I was trying to build this long road and somebody did the typical Carcassonne thing where they put an impossible piece and I could never close off that road. So we pretended the rest of the game that Yoda was in Dagobah and he was training somebody and we haven't heard from him in 20 years and we just don't know where he is. Somebody says it's the one, but we're not sure because there is another out there. So there's a lot of Star Wars quotes during the show, during the game.
Oh, I would have been all over that.
Was Star Wars Carcassonne good? No, it's... It's Carcassonne with a dumb combat mechanic.
Yeah.
Was it fun? And I know that that professional reviewers and critics don't like that word.
Sure.
I love that word because I know what it means to me. And hopefully people that hear the kind of games that I like, they're going to know what fun means to me. It's absolutely dumb, dice-chucking Carcassonne fun. So if you're into Star Wars, if you're into Carcassonne, you should probably skip it. If you're into Carcassonne and you really like Star Wars like you and I do, you're going to enjoy this game.
It's nice.
I wish I owned it because I would play it. We've been playing the one with the Cowboys and the Miners. I can't remember. Gold Rush. So we've been playing Carcassonne Gold Rush a lot. We really like Carcassonne Gold Rush, but I would play Star Wars Carcassonne over Gold Rush anytime. It's one of those standalones where you're not adding in, you know, I actually kind of like the standalones, like the Discovery and Gold Rush, where they're just their own games. You're not adding in a bunch of different expansions. I kind of like how it kind of refreshes the game a little bit. So that's Star Wars Carcassonne. Is that something that you would play at all?
It sounds like a great con game. It sounds like a bunch of people that are all in will have a lot of fun if we can just make Star Wars quotes. And it's a good way to get a Star Wars game in without picking one of the ones that's 2, 3, 4 hours.
That is exactly what it was. Big thrill for me. I'd love to own it. You know, not something that you should spend $100 or $200 for. That's kind of the going rate for those things. I don't even know if they make it any more at all. I don't know if you can get it. I feel dumb because I was in Madrid way back when at an awesome game store. No, I'm sorry, Barcelona. An awesome game store. They had the Star Trek Catan and they had Star Wars Carcassonne. I could have picked it up for cheap.
Yeah.
Just regular market price. I didn't know that it was something you couldn't buy in the States. By the way, tangent. We did play the do you know that Thanos Rising game? Okay. You know how they make a Star Wars one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you play that one?
Bradley bought one from Ireland.
Okay.
a guy from Ireland had it. The shipping wasn't cheap, but it is hard. If you're a Star Wars fan, it's really, really hard. I found it hard.
They're all hard.
Yeah, they're all hard.
We have to play, you know, my kids are really into Harry Potter. So we play the Harry Potter one, and we just play where, like, everybody gets two characters from the start so that you have your combos going.
Okay.
Because otherwise, the kids will look and be like, I mean, you know, you start with Harry Potter and Hermione and whatever, but let's just say you didn't. They look at the board and they're like, well, I want Dumbledore. So they start trying to roll to get Dumbledore, but he's like one of the hardest characters to roll.
Yeah.
So then you just start dying. So instead, I just give them all a character like, oh, now you have these two characters. And it's significantly easier, but it's more fun. You know what I mean? Like, so that's what I do. That has been my homebrew rule so that the kids can kind of make their own decisions and be part of it without me saying, well, I know you want Dumbledore, but you should really get this character that they never named in the movie.
Sure. Yeah, I found that. What is it called? Vader? No, it's not Vader Rising. What is it called?
Dark Side Rising.
I found it super hard. To me, it was harder than Thanos. But again, I'm not sure. And I never played the Harry Potter one. So that is one that I need to look at because my nephew and my niece, they are just Harry Potter fans all the way. So that's a good one to pick up. I don't know if I can still find that. Yeah, so that's Carcassonne Star Wars. Thumbs up as an experience. I don't need to spend $100 to buy it. So
nice.
Tell people I play it.
That's a really helpful review because I imagine some people would hear about it and then think, oh, should I go do that? Right. And it's like, You should not.
If you're at a con and you like Carcassonne,
you should play it.
And you like Star Wars, you should play it for sure.
Yeah.
Next one up I wanted to play is a game designed by Scott Caputo and Luke Laurie. I'm trying to remember. It's Bezier Games. Yep. And it's Whistle Mountain. I'm figuring you've played it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. So
really good.
Second one is I don't want to say older because I don't know what older means in COVID times. I mean, some of the hottest games that were at BGG Con are games I played a year or two ago.
That feels like spring of 2020. That's what that game feels like to me.
But I think when I was listening to a conversation between Tom and the guy that was running the library, I think it's Jeff from BGG. He was saying, look, we kept it open for about 2 years because we figured there's so many people that haven't been able to get to cons. The hotness is really the last 2 years. There's a lot of games that people missed just because they couldn't get to it. So,
I think Isle of Cats would have been huge had there been cons last year.
Yeah.
Still, I think that would have been a big game. That's one I've always thought of that came out in that January, February 2020, and it would have been huge otherwise.
I've heard the sales have been pretty good. So
yeah, no, I think it's still been pretty big.
I haven't played it yet. So one of these times I'm going to
play. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And I don't like polyomino games as a general rule. I like almost all of them. I just don't go out of my way.
I love polyomino games. So I think I would like that.
Yeah.
So Whistle Mountain is one that I didn't play. I actually own Whistle Stop, but I haven't played it. Okay. I don't know why. It's one of those things where I got it from somebody in a trade and I just haven't played it yet. But I tend to do that. If I trade for a game, sometimes I don't actually, it kind of goes on a separate pile rather than if I've spent money or if it's a game I need to review. I feel bad because I have all these traded games. I have a whole shelf full of them right there. Games I need to play that I traded for. So Whistle Mountain, Scott Caputo and Luke Laurie. The production is amazing. It's right away gets you into the theme. And I'm one of those guys. I'm just a sucker for beautiful components, especially if it just draws me in. Right. And this one, you're building out this scaffold, as you know, of this mountain. It reminds me of the Johnstown flood. You've got this amazing valley with all these workers lined up on the side. And already I could feel the tension because you can see the water as it's starting to rise slowly up each time people build into the above the bridge. Yeah. When you build above the bridge, it moves that water up. And I knew this would happen, you know, because you and I played games many times. I knew that the water was going to move very slowly the first couple of rounds and then just rush at us at the end. Yeah. And it absolutely did. It was, to me, I love when Euro games or board games in general have a cinematic sense to them. And that's what I felt. I felt like we were playing this movie where we're really trying to build buildings as quickly as possible and save as many people. And I'm telling you, we got into it. We were literally trying to save people out of the drink as often as we could. Yes, it's essentially a Euro where you're trying to manage your, you know, how you build these little tiny buildings onto the, I forgot what it's called, scaffolding, I think. You put the scaffolding out and you put the buildings on top of the scaffolding. And you're trying to get resources. And it's this Tetris puzzle where if I place it a certain way and I put my Zeppelin just the right way, I'm going to be tagging two different areas and getting a bunch of, but I got to make sure I do that before the water gets too high because then it cancels out the building. So it's thinky, but so much fun. I super enjoyed this one. I loved pulling people right out of the water as soon as I could. I actually kept all of mine out of the water for most of the game. Mm-hmm. I wasn't as good on the building part, so I don't think I came out first. I think I came out second, but oh man, I had such a good time playing it. You've played it before?
Yeah, oh yeah. I played it several times. And a great part where you're talking about with the buildings is that the buildings come out. I mean, what is it? It's almost like you got a stack of different sizes.
You do.
So every time you play, there's just some different combination of buildings coming out. So that's just so fun of like, oh, now this game, we're going to go for this, and this is coming out. So did you play Dwellings of Eldervale?
I have not. Oh, it's on my list.
It's the same thing.
It's Luke Laurie, right?
It's Luke Laurie. Yeah. And it's that same system of put your workers out, pull them back. Put your workers out, pull them back. And when you pull them back, you get a bonus. So I think Dwellings is like even more over the top production and there's more choices and more things going on. And so we got a hold of Dwellings. We played it. I actually borrowed Larry's copy, brought it home. Played it with everybody here multiple times, loved Dwellings. But I actually think when the dust settles, Whistle Mountain slowly kind of got better every play, and Dwellings got a little bit lower every play.
Samey.
They're both phenomenal games. So I hate comparing the two and making it sound like people should not try Dwellings and go for Whistle Mountain. But I think there's some beauty in the simplicity of Whistle Mountain that I like a lot better. But yeah, I don't know. They're both so good. If you told me, I would just flip a coin as to which one to play, which is actually a really good testament to the designer that you can have two games with very similar mechanism styles. Obviously, once you get into the secondary elements of the game, they're very different and the themes are very different.
And yet you still want to play both.
I want to play both. Yeah.
Well, kudos to most companies recognize that if I put a free copy in the library in the hotness, I'm going to get somebody to try it and they're going to want to buy it. That is a game that right away Dave and I put on our list. They're like, we're both putting in our, you know, look, it's Christmas time. I'm not supposed to be buying games, right? So we went right on the Christmas wish list and was like, Snow Bunny, my wife, like, if you get a chance, this could be a game you could give me, put it on the tree. I'm telling you, I would definitely, that's a game I am going to own Whistle Mountain at some point. So I super enjoyed it. I'm not here to give it a rating. It was a con game. It might have been the magic of the playing partners, you know, and the time of the day.
It's a great game.
Okay, well, good. That's what I
hear. You're going to have basically that same experience next time. If not, you're going to go, this didn't happen last game, and that's really fun.
Those cards, in a game. You know, so if you haven't played the game, at the top there are cards. And everything about the game from the sides of the board, it's all pretty standard. Yeah, you're choosing different types of buildings, but it's worker placement, and you're locking people out on certain spots. The water mechanic is really neat, but again, it's kind of a visual thing. It's not necessarily something that's super groundbreaking. A lot of games have this timer. The adding the cards in at the top, which absolutely break the game, and I love cards that do that. That's what I love about Viticulture. I love a lot of games that have these crazy cards that come out, and you know, I was slow in realizing how much those cards can change, and all of a sudden I'm grabbing cards and it's doing things like, you can pick up all of the airships all over the place, right? Yeah. Well, time that right whenever you have all three of your airships out and nobody has any airships. Like, I'll just take mine back in. So it's one of those things where the cards make you feel clever as you're playing it. And I love games that do that.
Yeah, you take a turn to gain massive potential. So it's like a risk, right? It's like a risk assessment thing. Like,
absolutely.
Oh, I'll lose a turn here of what I don't really know what I want to do, to gain a potential for a turn that could be phenomenal that may never come before that water level rises.
Sometimes they don't, but those super turns are so much fun when you pull them off. So that's Whistle Mountain. That's a game, you know, look, if you like the kind of games that I like, it's a game I'm eventually going to buy. So that would not be before Christmas, though. I know better than to buy games right before Christmas. So we're not going to do that.
I got my Christmas present. I don't know if I got it early. I don't know if you saw on Facebook. No. I got a kitten.
Oh, I did see that. Okay.
Orange tabby kitten. Yep. And so I had asked for a kitten for Father's Day 2022 because my wife likes pets, but she could be a little bit like, hey, let's plan to get this pet, you know? So I asked for one in the spring of this year. Like, you have over a year to get ready to get me a kitten. Well, my daughter was all in.
Have you all picked out a name yet?
Yeah, so it's Brandon Sanderson, like the author.
Oh, like the author. Oh, are you watching The Wheel of Time right now?
I am watching The Wheel of Time, yes. Ooh. Yep, and reading The Way of Kings, so.
I got to get back into that because I read the first
Stormlight
one. I started
Archives,
the second one,
yep.
And then I got distracted, and now I don't remember who's who, so it's going to be tough for me. And those
There's
are
not
books.
Too many like the extra characters, but anyway. So anyway, I got the kitten, so we got him because he was 8 weeks old and he was ready to go, and they surprised me, and I had no idea. So I just started crying when they gave me the kitten. I was so excited. I'm a huge cat person. I like dogs too, for sure, but I'm definitely a big cat person. And he's just been great to have around the house. I love having a cat. In fact, I messaged you. We were watching White Christmas and my Christmas kitten was snuggling with me. Oh. I mean, right? Like, can you have, and it snowed today. It was just like, this is like the end of him. And he lived happily ever after.
And then they went scene, and that's the Hallmark movie. Click. It's like right there.
So it was great. Yeah. It was.
So awesome. No cute nickname. Like, I saw one of my friends posted. I'm trying to remember who it is. Their kitten is named Meeples, maybe. Yeah. Meeples, I think, is what they went. No cute board game name.
No, we name our cats after authors. So we have Emily Dickinson and Brandon Sanderson.
Are y'all going to go with Brandon?
I think it's just Brandon. We've just been calling him Brandon. Okay. I mean, we could do Brand. I don't know. B. Like, I don't. Yeah. But it seems like Brandon just works.
We'll see what comes out next.
And he responds to it now, too. So he's gotten used to it. Oh, well, apparently my wife and daughter have picked. My daughter kept him a secret for 8 weeks, which is amazing. Oh, wow. And they told him when they picked him out, oh, his name's going to be Brandon. So the people called him Brandon. So he's heard his name all the way through. Nice. And cats aren't great about knowing their name compared to dogs, but they definitely do know their name.
So, Brandon Sanderson, the kitten. Cute, cute.
I know you're a little short on time, so we're going to get you to your last game, though. That is my aside. But yeah, I was so happy with my Christmas. I told my wife, I don't need anything else. I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
Christmas, whatever you want. I'm so happy. I love cats.
You are all good. I was thinking of going with something. So what's the mountain? A couple of years old, right? If I remember right.
I think it's 2020.
Okay. How about something that's new and maybe tough to get, but
there you go.
I don't know. I haven't checked it out. I know it's available at Essen, and it's called, it's a Ameritrashy dice chucking. Just, you know, when you think about theme, it's called Gutenberg. You are okay. Rival printing press people, and you're, well, I can't lie. It's not Ameritrashy.
It doesn't sound dice chucky.
Printing
presses.
I was doing that shtick with Tom Vessel, and Tom looked at me. He's like, wait, that's not Gutenberg at all. Did you play Steve Gutenberg, maybe? No. So, just doing comedy. But Gutenberg.
You're printing Bibles. Just exactly. Bibles.
And there's flames and people fighting and, you know, rival gangs that are trying. Are you going to do this in English or not? So, no, it's not like that at all. But I love thematic Euros. I like. So, in other words, this is the opposite of Bonfire. The absolute. It's Bonfire went this way and Gutenberg where it said, we're going to run. We're going to go that way. So,
got it.
Gutenberg is rival printing press owners, and you're trying to upgrade the printing presses. And it is the production is just what you would think. The type sets are actually reversed, which takes some getting used to.
Okay.
They're only four letters. Five letters, A, E, I, O, and U. The vowels, right. And they're reversed, though. So the A looks so strange. It takes a while to get used to it. I'm sure somebody's going to complain about it. I love that because, you know, growing up, I just love newspapers.
Print it, yep.
It would be reversed, and then you stamp it, and you tap it on it. And that's exactly how it is. Second thing I love about it, and I'm going from, you know, the mundane to the most spectacular.
All right.
Second thing I loved about it was the fact that, like Smartphone Ink, the game teaches itself from the board. Remember, if you played Smartphone Ink, all you got to do is follow the colors left to right. And that's the whole game. You almost don't need the rule book. You do, but you don't have to when you play the game again. You can just look at it and go, oh, yeah, I know how this game is. Gutenberg the same way. Start from the top, go to the bottom. Each action, each of the five things that you're going to be doing on your turn, just go start at the top and go to the bottom, and they're self-explanatory. So I like that. You're diving into the game right away without this super long rules teach.
Mm.
Number three are the gears. The gears themselves.
Oh, I saw your picture now that you say that.
Yeah, they actually move, and they move in a way that's diabolical to somebody who took zero math in college. I took nothing scientific related at all. Zero. So this is a hard game for me. I have to remember that if you turn the gear this way, it's going to turn that gear the other way.
And it's going to turn the next one the same way.
Right. So knowing where to put the gears on, and you do them 1, 2, 3, and then, you know, over the first three rounds. And then after that, you can switch them out and move them around and do different things like that. And each one is going to be pointing to a crescent on the board. Those crescents are 1/3 of the gear. So you're able to activate 1/3 of the gear. So the puzzle of getting the bonus you want lined up to the crescent at the time when you place it, thinking in terms of, okay, in a turn or two, I'm going to have to turn this gear. What's it going to look like in a turn? And what's it going to do to the third one? It's just, it's so juicy. It's so crunchy. I just loved it, man. It's like eating a Popeye's chicken sandwich. I mean, it's just the crunch is right there.
Right.
I like that part. But
maybe the
topper part, although it's really close, is the combination of that Dungeon Pets action bidding system behind a screen. You've got five actions. You've got between 7 and 10 black cubes. Brant, you got to think, how many cubes am I going to put into which different action? What does the Brant want? He's got three good gears. So I could probably go a little less on the gears because he's not going to be worried about the gears. And all of a sudden the Brant goes, no, I really wanted that gear. And I put four, you know?
Yeah.
And then the tiebreaker breaks everything. So if you're the first player and you hold that tiebreaker, you could cheat and put a little less because you know you're always going to be breaking.
Break all the ties for that round.
Every time there's a tie with you and somebody else, you break it. Downsides, the first play, phenomenal. Second play, kind of felt like the same as the first place, you know, second verse, same as the first type thing.
Sure,
but
sure.
I think that's just because that's a con thing. Sometimes, you know, we just don't have enough. It's really noisy in the Hot Games room. It's a small room. They limit it as best as they could, but everybody's got masks on and you're having to talk really loud to try to get through the mask.
Right, right.
Everybody else is talking really loud. So that means everybody's talking louder. And so you're talking louder to talk louder.
Right.
So it was a little hard to think. I think if it was quiet, I would have thought about some different strategies. So I'm worried about the sameness. And number two, the player powers. I'm not a fan of the player powers in Furnace because I just don't feel like they're really that balanced. They don't feel that balanced.
Okay.
Same thing in Gutenberg. These player powers, I mean, I'm sorry. They're not balanced. I mean, I even though I've only played it twice and I'm going to get yelled at because you haven't played enough, I'm telling you, there are some that are clearly better than others.
Yeah. Are they long-term optional?
They're the entire game. You get these player powers. And one person can wait until everybody bids and then move one of their cubes around. So they'll go, oh, the Brant's got two, right. And I've got two. I'm going to take this one that I was already winning anyway, and I'm just going to move it there.
Yeah,
that's
no,
a really good power.
Yeah, that's really good.
You know,
does everybody have? But you're saying everybody does. So it's not a Marco Polo. That's kind of always the quintessential. Everybody has a good power.
Marco Polo is the way it should be done. Everybody's got a green game-breaking power. It's your fault if you didn't figure out how to exploit it, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the designers are going. Maybe they're saying, hey, look, BJ, you haven't played the game enough.
Sure.
I could beat you with this power. We just didn't see it. You know, we just didn't see it. There was a couple of powers that we just felt were underwhelming. Maybe that's because I'm a bad player and I just didn't see the benefits of it. So,
right.
You know, I just don't know. But other than that, I really enjoyed Gutenberg. It got a lot of buzz at the con. A lot of people were playing it. There were some games that got a little bit more buzz. I think Golem was one of those that we played that got a little bit more buzz. But Gutenberg got a lot of buzz. It had two. It had two tables and they were always full. I did sneak in to get two. Not sure how you can get this game right now. It's from Grana Games. That is not a company that I know a lot about. I recognize the name, but that's about it.
Yeah. Grana, I know a bunch of them. Specifically, there were two that were brought over by Northstar, but I know Northstar would not be bringing them over now. So it'd be interesting to see who picks those up.
The rumors that we heard coming out of Essen is that somebody is going to pick them up, and maybe somebody just hasn't been announced, or maybe it has been announced and I just missed it. But if you can get to a convention, or if you can keep an eye on the market and see when somebody needs to bring this game over. It's good. It's a game. After the first play, I was like, oh, I definitely got to buy a copy. Now after the second play, I'm like, I think I want to play it again before I decide.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of stuck in the middle there, but. As for enjoying it, I super enjoyed both of my plays.
I really like how you broke that down with all the things you really liked and didn't like. Like you really, you took me on the roller coaster.
I did.
I feel like I didn't do that as well with Imperial Steam, but there was a lot more, it sounds like, to Imperial Steam. So
I'm going to sneak one last game for you, but just give you a brief one because I think this is one that's going to be coming over, and that is Bad Company.
Okay.
Have you heard of this one at all?
Yeah, I think somebody was playing it in our store, so I don't know if they had their copy. I don't know if they got a copy from somewhere or if it was a Kickstarter that delivered.
I don't think it did.
Kickstarter.
No, I think it did go Kickstarter.
Okay, so maybe it delivered and it hasn't come retail Kickstarter.
It's from Aporta Games, and Aporta is selling it on the website. The problem on the website is that I think they apparently bicycle it all the way from Europe to here because it's super expensive with the shipping, which I understand. I'm making a joke. I mean, the shipping conditions are pretty bad out there. Hey, look, check at the portal and let me know if you guys have a copy because you and I can talk.
We don't have any copies at the portal. I know that. I saw someone playing it at the portal.
Okay. Yeah, so it's called Bad Company. If you've played Space Base, yay. If you played Machi Koro, it's like that game. So
got it.
It's basically, I call those dice engine builders. I'm not sure if there's a specific word for Space Base, but that's what I call it, dice engine.
Yeah, makes sense.
So you got a row of a gang of thieves. Picture sort of Ocean's 11 with Fast and the Furious smashed together. Right.
Okay.
So
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Right. Thinking in terms of movies. You got 12 members of your gang. You got a board of 12 numbers. You have 10 members in your gang. The numbers go 3 to 11. The 2 and the 12 are like the super turns. If anybody does the 2 or 12, it's like Christmas comes to town because you're going to get this really cool bonus. But the rest of the time, it's standard. If you hit a certain number, you're either going to get gold, or you're going to get some kind of resource, or you're going to get to move your car. And yes, You move your car in this game, Brant.
Okay.
So there's another board, and this is where it beats Space Base in my mind. Vassal doesn't agree.
Beats Space Base.
It beats Space Base in my mind, and here's why. Number one, it only takes 30 minutes. Number two, I can teach it in 2 minutes. And number three, it's got a visual board where the cops are after you. Okay. I mean, I'm saying, we didn't play, when you play Space Base, how thematic do you get when you play Space Base?
And by the way, no, it's not.
Space Base is one of my top 25 games I've ever played. I've got everything for it. We played through the Pluto campaign. I love that game.
Yeah, no, it's not particularly thematic. It could be anything. In fact, it's a game my wife doesn't play space games specifically, so it's out. But if they just change it to any other theme, she'd be in.
Bad Company is so thematic. There's a cop car that chases you all through the town. If it ever catches you, at the end of the game, you lose 3 points if it's ahead of you.
Okay.
Also, as you're rolling through the town, there's a couple of in-game triggers, and one of those is getting to the getaway, right? If you get out of town with the goods, sort of like, Vital Lacerda without
escape plan. yeah.
Sort of like that. If you get to that, that triggers the in-game. If all the way through the town, there are bonuses. Every time you go through these certain spaces, you get free stuff, free gold, free lots of things. But you don't get them if the cop car is ahead of you. So you want to stay ahead of the cop car, but you also want to upgrade your gang. You can't just go with the regular gang. So you got to buy those upgrade cards and add more numbers. But at the same time, you also want to complete heists because that's what you want. You're a jewel thief. You're an art thief. You're supposed to be completing the heist with the resources you're getting. So your brain's going crazy because you're trying to outrun the cops. You're trying to keep your gang and organize them and get them, pumped up. And at the same time, you're trying to steal stuff. Oh, man. Tell you, 30 minutes, cinematic. I've played the game now 3 times, and every single time it's played different. One time, the cops never even came by. Apparently, there was some mugger that they were, chasing down through the back streets of Baltimore, and they left us alone the entire time. We're going on this leisurely stroll through the city, just stealing art, stealing jewels, and all the way to the end. The second time, when the time we played with Bonacore, the cop was on our tail the entire time. He was ahead of everybody by the end of the game, except for two people. Gotcha. And the two people that were ahead lost. You weren't even the winners. So I'm saying, I about games? People say that Euros are dry. People say that board games are dry. It's not really a thing. When we played this game, it was like watching a 30-minute movie. It really was. Right. So I just love those games. Sorry I had to snick that one last
one. No, that's fine.
I'm super excited about Bad Company. I'm going to be doing it for the breakfast, so I shouldn't have even talked about it now. It's one of my games for the board game breakfast. But
oh, nice.
I think that game needs to come to America somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to look into it. I've been a little bit out of it, like not even me and not with it with the store, but just shipping is so all over the map. I mean, getting Ticket to Ride and Catan to restock can be tricky right now.
Wow,
so
really?
I mean, those are pretty much you can get them, but you're talking about the secondary pieces of like the 5 and 6 player expansion for Catan. Like that's a right. Whoever bought Catan last year is now wanting to buy the 5 and 6 player expansion this year. You know
what's hot at your store right now?
Dinosaur World. We got that Kickstarter in, and that's hot at the store for sure. I mean, they just released a new Magic set, so that's going to be a big. Oh, I know what's hot at our store now. Unmatched. That has hit a second wave from board gamers to now card gamers.
Oh,
what's happening is Wednesday night and Friday night Magic have their standard Commander and standard night. And then when that ends, everybody sticks around from 10 or 11 till 12 or 1 playing Unmatched.
Oh, that's great.
So that has really caught on. That one's been big. And then some of the there's a group that plays Age of Steam, and then they've been playing the new Great Western Trail, that stuff, the Terraforming Mars, Ares Project. It's a little bit backed up though, right? Because if all these people have been going to the cons, it would be all this stuff that you're talking about that everybody would be trying to get their hands on. But instead, it's everything from 6 months ago.
Yep.
That's hot right now. Yeah. You know, Dinosaur World being on the cutting edge of that.
I saw the Restoration Game said though that the shipping parts for Unmatched, they're finally getting in, they're restocked. So I'm glad to hear that it's a game. Yeah, I'm glad. So we have a lot of Magic players that come to our board game nights, and they're always looking for those transitional type games. Duel of Wands was one that we've used Renegade, maybe?
Renegade.
I can't remember who makes it. Yeah. So, but I hadn't even thought about Unmatched. That's perfect.
Unmatched.
They love playing
decks. It's perfect. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. So that's my BGG Con experience. So good to see people again. So good to be in Dallas. And I don't think we're going to ever get one where there's 1,200 people, 1,500 people.
I know. Yeah.
5,000. That would be like going to Gen Con and there being 8,000 people at the whole convention. You know, you feel like you have the place to yourself. Right. I just don't think we're going to see BGG Con that small again. So I was lucky enough to get there. So we'll see.
Nice. Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. And I got PAX Unplugged in 2 weeks. So I'll be able to play a bunch of these games, assuming they brought them in. They have like a hot games area as well. So
the name father will be there, I think. He's going to be there for one day. So make sure you see Steve O'Rourke and tell him, hey, I'll sit him by the booth. You're going to be at Capstone?
So I don't think so.
Okay.
I normally would work Capstone, no problem. But this is the one convention my wife goes to with me, and I try not to work. Yeah, we have worked Dice Tower booth together because basically at that one, Tom says, hey, whenever you want to work, work. When you don't. So we just go and jump in there together. She does like doing that stuff because so the problem is I say, oh, let's just walk over there, 10 booths down, and I talk to everyone in between, and she gets bored.
Hey, so you know,
the last one, she went and did a paint and take, and she loved that. She just sat down for 2.5 hours and painted a couple minis and took them with her. And she was like, "And just go talk to everybody that you need to see and then come back."
So this was the first con that I did not work ever.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever been to a big con, Dice Tower Con, PAX South, BGG, Gen Con. I've always worked a booth, at least in my memory. I don't remember ever not working a booth. Maybe my first Gen Con, maybe, but I don't even think so. Maybe. I don't remember. Maybe first one.
I know Capstone's looking for help.
This was a total different experience, man. I just enjoyed playing games all day.
Yeah, that is amazing. And kind of sticking with a group. Yeah, Capstone needs help, so I may jump in and do one session. I was particularly thinking of doing a morning session and then kind of my wife could make her way over later. But we're going down five of us because Eric Summer is coming with us because there's no Dice Tower booth there. So he's just going to come down with us. So it's Larry, Brian, me, Kathy, and Eric staying our Airbnb. So
we kind of mixed and matched, but for the most part, it was me and the Dave from the Gumbo and the Board Boys podcast guys. And that was fun just having that kind of solid group. Oh, you know who else was there? Spencer from
and
Laura. Yeah. So Spencer was able to sneak away for one night. We went and took us to a restaurant, and then we went to kind of like a little side room, not part of the convention, and we played Unfathomable. So we'll have to talk about that another time. So,
awesome.
Because nice. I know Paula did a big thing on Unfathomable, so I don't need to talk about it tonight. Your viewers already watched that. But that was cool seeing Spencer again. I hadn't seen Spencer in 2 or 3 years, so that was fun.
Yeah, I was able to see him at Gen Con. So that was good to see him. Two, I agree. Man, all right, we're going to wrap this up. I think it's time. So thanks, everybody, for listening to episode 175. This is the Portal Gaming Podcast. Thank you, BJ. Tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, social media is easy. It's at Board Game Gumbo anywhere and everywhere. Tuesday nights, we've been doing a Twitch streaming while I try to get this studio set up for Gumbo Live in the spring. The Twitch is at Board Game Gumbo on Twitch. And we do all kind of gaming, you know, just whatever we feel like playing. And there's a good chat crew that we visit with. And then, you know, we've got the blog, we've got the YouTube channel. But really, it's just at Board Game Gumbo everywhere.
Awesome. So check them out at Board Game Gumbo with the whole Gumbo gang.
The Gumbo crew.
Gumbo crew. That's right. Oh, I knew that. Oh. I should have known. Of course.
Awesome. DJ Bell and Dave and all the rest of them. So Bradley and all the check us out. We'd love to have more people chat in with us. We just have a good time. I'm starting to dig this Twitch vibe, man. Really good.
Nice. Awesome. So thank you so much for joining me. I am the Brant. And until next time, I hope you step into the portal. Bye, everybody.
Bye.